This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. There's loads of people on today's episode. We're being invaded by the Fleet Geeks. Let's jump into the intro and I'll tell you some more about it. Let's go.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution and one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviors.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding Safety. Crushing a stereotype. Brought to you by Riskfluent.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Rebranding Safety is a YouTube channel and podcast doing exactly what it says on the tin. So if you're new here, hit subscribe and the bell and all of those buttons. My name is James McPherson. I'm from the company called Riskfluent Limited. And Rebranding Safety is our purpose. So thank you very much for joining us on our journey. And thank you for being here. It's lovely to see you all. Let's get into today's episode. So this is the last of the quarterly co-hosts with Pete Rushmere, and we've got Pete's Fleet Geeks with us. So there's a community, kind of like what we do with the Health and Safety Network, very similar in Fleet Geeks. So it's a community of people trying to make the place, the world a better place, I suppose, probably the best way to do it. But ultimately, they are what they say on the tin. They're a bunch of people who are proper geeky about fleet. So let's listen to it. Let's go have a chat with the Fleet Geeks.
VR happy in Peterborough. Yeah, virtual reality Peterborough.
Bearing in mind, James, I'm an old git and like a lot older than these guys and your good self. And I, for me, it was like, what is this? What is this wizardry that you're transported into this sort of world that is virtual reality? You know, I mean, I was brought up in black and white and stuff. So to me, it was like, oh, wow, I've never seen it like that before.
That
was great. Loved it.
Oh, I love that. I didn't even know what that was. I'm going to have to Google that. That sounds interesting.
Good.
Yeah, so for listeners, VR Happy is a place in Peterborough. It sounds like there's happy endings. It's not that kind of virtual reality place, right? But you do leave happy. But basically, they've got a couple of these pods. You know, you see them in the arcades now where you kind of put the goggles on and the pod kind of moves you around and stuff, like on roller coasters. But then they've also got like proper virtual reality where you've got the stuff in your hands and you can play the games like swords and Buddha, bow and arrow, weren't we? And we went up in the lift and walked the plank, which was
that's
a
really
good one
good,
for a bit of vertigo.
Oh, no, I couldn't do that. I did that actually at Wayne Canton did like a. They use VR for a load of safety training, and I had that exercise. Mate, I couldn't get. Is it when we go up in the lift and then you open it and it's just a plank?
Yeah.
I didn't leave the lift.
Yeah. And you're like at the top of a load of offices. Yeah, I didn't the first time around. I had to go for a second go.
I couldn't do.
It's really bizarre. In my head, I was telling me all the time because Pete told me he couldn't leave the lift that it's just virtual reality. But I was fine walking out of the plank. But I couldn't step off straight away. It's unbelievable, isn't it? How it tricks the mind.
Yes.
Look perception of what's there.
Yeah.
It's nuts. It's proper nuts. I genuinely couldn't step. My legs wouldn't move.
Jelly, isn't it? Like jelly. Your legs go to jelly.
Yeah, that's literally it. And I was like, oh my God. And Sam Neill, fair play to him, obviously, just waltzed out when we were there. It was like, there was Sam Neill there, who Peter, you know, and Peter Jenkins was there, who I think you guys were talking to anyway. He just walked out. Sam Neill just walked out on the plank, jumped off. Oh, this is a bit weird. I was like, all right, Sam. God. Masculine kind of like, I'm not scared or anything. Kids went up and we did a vlog of the day. We put this in the vlog. Peter Jenkins went up and let a proper little squeal out. And I was like, oh, thank God. At least I wasn't the only. We've had Pete jumped off. So I didn't even make it out of the lift. I couldn't do it. Right, Jen. Let's get into it. Why don't you introduce yourselves real quick? Who wants to go first? Can someone put their hand up, go first. The boss can go first.
Yeah, I think the boss should go first. Yeah, set the standards.
It's his prerogative.
Come on, Pete.
He's gone quiet.
He's not normally quiet on these. Come on, Pete.
What's going on? Has he froze? He's not froze. Oh, he has froze.
Oh, he probably has, yeah.
Oh, come on, Jamie. You go first,
Pete. I'll go then. I am a senior safety and transport. Oh, he's back.
He's back.
I'm back in the room. I'm back in the room. The kids are obviously home from school, so the Wi-Fi bandwidth has just gone like that. So I'm now tethering off the phone. So apologies for that. You lost me temporarily. Sorry, where were we? Was I introducing myself?
You were.
I've just interrupted Jamie introducing himself, haven't I? Jamie, you carry on.
Well, I'll carry on. Before I was interrupted, I was... my name's Jamie. I work for Flagship Partners. Been here a year now. I think a year and a week, I believe. Senior safety and transport consultant. So a bit of a crossover with safety and transport. But as we all know, there's a lot of parallels between the two, really.
Yeah, nice one. Let's leave Pete till last. Come on, Mike.
Yeah, I'm Mike. Yeah, so Mike Vickers, I'm the training guru. I'm the training guru. So, my principal role within Flagship even is to do all the, not all the training, I do it all on my own, of course, but do the transport manager training in particular, which is kind of my bag, but I will turn my hand to anything. In fact, they've even had me first aid training, which is a turn up for the books, but that's me. I've been about 6 months now, so after leaving a very, very famous, members organisation. Without giving it away too much, I was going to be very careful.
He left Transport's equivalent of IOSH, basically, to come and work with us, basically. Yeah?
I was trying to do it without giving the name away, but it's hard.
Well, you still didn't. But at least IOSH, like everyone listening will be able to like get their head around IOSH. They get what that is, don't they? Yeah. Which is good, isn't it? And Mike, what are you? Because you got some feedback the other day. What are you, Mike?
We get feedback, get a lot of feedback, and we love feedback in the training industry. A trainer loves a good bit of feedback. But I got some feedback the other day, which is the best feedback I've ever had. And it wasn't gushing or glowing like they normally are, of course. It was just, Mike is a legend. And I thought, wow, that for me, that's the best I've ever had. Mike is a legend even, yes.
That's quite impressive, mate. The best I've got is I got emailed... like one company connecting me with another company, and it said, "Hi Tom, this is James. James is the only safety professional I know that isn't a complete loser."
I'll take that. Yeah,
that's going on the website. That went on the website straight away.
Superb.
Yeah, it's a compliment I think I could have asked for. Right, come on, Pete, introduce yourself.
I don't know, mate. I think it's a bit controversial with that Tash, mate.
What are you on about? I will kick you out of this call, you know.
You are in control. So who am I? Well, listeners will be a bit familiar with me, hopefully. If you've been living under a rock and haven't listened to the first two podcasts, I suggest you go and listen to them and find out what it's all about and who the Fleet Geeks are. But yeah, my name's Pete. Founder of Flagship. I do a bit of consultancy and safety training and safety consultancy and bits and pieces when I'm not going to watch the Mighty Man United at Old Trafford, you know. So, that's me, I guess.
You know what I find more offensive than my moustache is that you've football top, not just Man United, I can give a shit about Man United, but a football top. Just like, oh, mate, I'm this close, Pete. You're on thin ice, mate. You're really...
At least I'm not on thin hair.
Well,
I'd be gone then, wouldn't I?
Yeah. Pete, just quickly, do you want to give us a quick summary of what we covered in episode one and two and kind of the notion of what we've been talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. So do you know what? I think it's really great to have Mike and Jamie join us, because the first session was a bit of an introduction to what like transport looks like, what fleet looks like, and operator licensing and that kind of thing. And then the second podcast, we looked a bit more at the role of the transport manager and what the transport manager does. So it kind of makes sense to have two far better transport managers than what I am on the call, particularly, you know, Jamie, who's done it for years longer than I've done it and managed some really big fleets, and obviously Mike, who trains the bloody qualification. So it's great to have these guys on. But yeah, those last two, if people are interested in fleet and operator licensing and those kinds of things, and particularly in a safety context, then that's what the first two sessions were about.
Nice one. Do you know, we've had a premiership winning, European championship winning rugby player on this podcast, right? We've had some of the biggest thought leaders in safety on this podcast. And genuinely, in the last year, 2 years, I've had more comments and feedback from this conversation that we've had with you, Pete, than I have on many other podcasts for the last, I'll probably say, 3 years. Oh, James, this one with the Pete about Fleet, was I didn't know this. And I'm like, well, who'd have thought Pete Rushmill was quite popular? It's been really.
I don't even know what to say. I think my career's peaked, mate.
Well, we won't ask what rugby player that was then, but yeah.
What was your name? Clark. Something Clark. I can't remember his name.
I'll have to look at that back episode.
He plays.
Don't mind a bit of the oval ball myself, to be fair.
It's a proper sport, mate. He used to play for Saris.
All right.
I can't remember. Anyway, so yeah, it's. I think what that showed me was a lot more safety professionals than what I knew. A lot of my audience would already be having either getting close to Fleet, or already have it kind of chucked on there. Oh, your safety, you can do Fleet safety as well. Same thing, right? Just do that. But I think based off like the interaction we've had off the back of this, I think a lot more safety professionals are getting this more than what I thought. And a lot of them have found it really interesting. And I'm really, really excited about this one, as I kind of alluded to. God, if we can just get Pete over and done with and get the other two lads on, that would be... Really interested in the dynamic as well. I quite like panel style, conversation is much better. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this, guys. So you guys as a collective run something called Fleet Geeks, and so give me an insight into what is that? Yeah, obviously the kind of does what like Ron Seelitz does, what it says on the, you're all geeky about Fleet, but what does that actually mean? What is it? What do you guys do within it?
Well, I think it's just the three of us talking. Sometimes we do it remotely if we're not all together. Sometimes we do it when we are together, and we just talk about we kind of make it up on the hoof, really. Oh, it's a secret there. But if there's a sort of crossover with your listeners and our listeners, we perhaps shouldn't have said that because it's given the game away. But there is definitely what's the flavour of the month? What issues are bugging Fleet professionals, transport managers at this point in time? And we just chat about it. And I think that's the beauty of it. We don't set out to give a lesson or to give any sort of instruction or training. It's just a chat, isn't it, about stuff, folks?
Yeah. Oh, we were saying that transport can be quite a lonely place for a transport manager. So to hear other people talking about it, I think it's, massive, really. Just to hear other people talking about the industry. I know as well, not many of my friends outside of work are in the industry. So no one wants to listen to me chat about work and things when I'm out and about. So I get that opportunity on Fleet Geeks. So that's what it's about, really, is it? Just a chat.
Yeah. We sinks time so quickly, don't we? We just like three of us get together and we just go, right, let's talk about driver licensing, Bosch. And literally we just chat for like 15, 20 minutes until we run ourselves out of gas. And that's some going if you hear these two chuntering away. So
I think that's how I brought you, Mike, I'll be honest.
But I think so the flagship partners brand and the business does what it does, but I wanted the Fleet Geeks to just be something separate, which was where people had access to being able to almost like a library of content where they could go, do you know what, I don't really know much about this, or I don't know much about that, and it's like searchable content where people can go and just hear us having a bit of a gas about it. And the thing is, by listening in on those conversations, the whole concept was that it'd be like us three sat on the sofa having a chat about stuff, and then people would be able to kind of like listen in, and they're kind of getting that experience from the sort of three of us, really. But it's like, I don't know, like we get content from Facebook posts. You know, there's loads of transport manager forums on Facebook, for example. So we'll just look like what's flavor of the month at the moment. There's this thing called the 28-day rule for tachographs and manual entries. A lot of people who are listening, that will just go bosh over their head. But it's a massive thing. And the whole industry is like a little bit, needs a little bit of guidance about it. So we've poked fun at it, we've had a bit of a laugh at it, we've done our bit, and we've probably done a couple of bits of content on it, haven't we? So, but hopefully that will help people get their heads around it and realise. But it's not just that; it's realising, like Jamie said, it's that people aren't on their own. Like actually, there's other people who've got them same challenges. So yeah, that's it really. I'm gonna shut up now.
I like that. I did an interesting conversation the other day, actually, around drivers' hours and stuff like that, which it shows. I mean, even in my consulting role, you know, fleet keeps coming up quite regularly lately, which is why I keep ringing Pete. what is this, Pete? Does this make sense? And we were talking about maternity risk assessment as a collective, but we said, well, what? And he ended up saying that the father of the pending child, so to speak, also worked for the company driving HGV. And I said, well, have you thought about the dads in this conversation? What do you mean? I said, I'm telling you now, like my daughter for the first year, I would not want to be driving a HGV off like a couple of hours sleep. Like, so the difference between driver's hours, so to speak, and how many hours behind the wheel, and how many hours sleep did you actually get, and how awake and alert actually are you?
Yeah, different. You think about the letter of the law, and you know, three times between their sort of what we call their weekly rests, drivers can have as little as 9 hours off duty, if you like, off duty. So between finishing a shift and starting another one, so that's 9 hours they've got to drive. Potentially, they've got to drive home, say hello to the kids. Have a bit of tea.
Yeah.
Have a bit of tea. Shit, shower and shave. Not necessarily in that order. And then do it all again in the morning. So how much actually sleep have they had in that time? You know, it's what would you get? 4 or 5 hours sleep in that time if you're lucky. But and they can do that. And they can do that three times between their weekly rests, which is, you know, when you're in your vehicle and you're looking in your car and you're looking in your rearview mirror and you see a truck coming up behind you, you've got to think, well, just how much sleep has that driver had in the last 24, 48 hours?
And let's not just lose that there, because it's not just three times. They could potentially do it every bloody day if they have 3 hours break during the day.
They could.
They could do a nine hour rest every bloody day of the week.
They could
only have a 24-hour rest for the weekend.
For the weekend, yeah.
So they could potentially have done. They could potentially have done 12 shifts like that. On the bounce with 124 off.
And
isn't it? How hard an HGV driver could work.
Big tick in the compliant box as well.
And that's potentially. Sorry.
Difference between when we're in what I deal with in safety is that when we're dealing with the difference between, there's something that actually the Scottish First Minister said mid-COVID, which I really liked. She said, well, we want people to behave not to the letter of the law, but within the spirit of the law.
Yeah.
Really like that, and like I feel like that's the difference there is that example, but we see it in I see it in normal safety as well. Like there's a difference between being the letter of the law and trying to wiggle your way through things and doing it within the spirit of the law as well.
I'm stealing that, but it wasn't Nicola Sturgeon, was it?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
To be fair, this spirit of the law and letter of the law actually it hinges on quite a few of the conversations we have in Fleet Geeks, isn't it? Which is around, we talk about what's safe and what's compliant, and the transport sector is hell-bent on focusing on compliance, aren't they? We don't really have, it's only really us that has a safety bloody conversation half the time. Just because a driver can do 15-hour shifts, is he safe to do a 15-hour shift? No one's really having that conversation, are they? And if you got a second taco card, mate, you wouldn't even have to stop.
He's joking, folks.
That does happen, though, James. Just to put you in the loop, that does happen.
It does happen, yeah.
You get drivers who have two cards, and obviously the traffic commissioner will soon catch up with them if hopefully they catch up on them. But I think that's okay, here's a question actually for Mike and Jamie, and hopefully this doesn't go over listeners' heads. And I've never asked you guys this before. How prevalent do you think off taco driving is? So i.e. drivers not putting their taco cards in, or fraudulent taco activity where drivers have multiple cards?
I don't know.
The director goes to a driver, just use my card today.
I think Jamie will probably agree with me on this one. He's probably closer to it than I am, but I hear at least one story per week from training sessions where somebody, a transport manager or somebody in the transport offices, had a driver that's pulled what we call pulling their card, which means they take their tachograph card out to complete some of the journey sort of in the dark, as it were. Jamie, would you agree? Would that be?
Yeah, I probably don't see it once a week. I have seen it. I see both fraudulent and the card being pulled. So I've had drivers where they've been asked to move at night by the police or something, and they've pulled their card to move when actually there's a process. To, you know, it's infringement, is it? You get the officer to sign the print out of the TACO unit to say why you've moved, and it's them not understanding it more than them putting their card to get home. Although I did know an agency driver that pulled his card because he fell out with the company he was working for and just drove straight back because he didn't want to work for that company anymore. And you think, well, how many hours did he do before? And the other one I did recently, the first time ever, a customer actually spotted this. Not I didn't spot this. A customer spotted that someone had used a second card to get back as well because they couldn't work out how he'd done what he'd done.
Wow, and yeah.
So that's the first real time I've seen that happen. But yeah, you wouldn't know until it happens, would you? So or someone catches them. With the pulling the card, most of the systems are good at catching that, aren't they? Because
yeah,
as an operator, you have to account for any missing mileage that's not attributed to a driver. So an operator worth their salt really would know that a card's been pulled. So that then, if that is happening, you could actually, you know, is an operator turning a blind eye to that? That would be another issue, wouldn't it?
So one of the things that I just want to put out there with restricted operators, though, is often you have drivers who are more experienced transport professionals than the company directors. Yeah. So the drivers know all the loopholes and all the little tricks. And actually, potentially this type of fraudulent activity could be going on without directors, line managers, health and safety managers. They've actually got no idea because they don't understand how it works. And the drivers have been getting away with it, potentially. And you could have companies. I've not really thought about it before on the podcast with James, but genuinely, there could be companies out there who haven't got a control of their transport operation and they're winning awards for their safety. They're, you know, literally everything. And they could be so far wrong the other side of compliant when it comes to their transport operation with no idea what their drivers are doing.
But can I add into the mix, though, James, that we've talked exclusively almost about heavy goods vehicles. But, you know, in my experience, a lot of health and safety professionals, when they're given this sort of fleet, when they're handed this fleet on a plate and said, there you go, you can look after that. It's kind of health and safety-ish kind of stuff. The vast majority of those, in my experience, have been vans and even the car fleet. Suddenly lands in the lap of a health and safety professional, and vans is a whole new ball game because you know there is some 53-year-old rules that concern the hours that van drivers drive, and but they very 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 rarely even know them or even stick to them, and it's not very well policed. So
they don't even know they exist, do they?
They don't exist, you know.
How many tradies know about GB domestic rules?
No, very few. I'd probably say less than 10%.
And I'm not putting you on the spot here, James, but did you know if a driver drives for more than 4 hours for work, they're covered by what's called GB domestic rules?
No.
It's totally expected, mate. It's totally expected. But essentially, yeah, there's such a thing. It's very hard to police, isn't it, guys? But GB domestic rules, if someone drives for work, if they drive for more than 4 hours in a day, they're covered by something called GB domestic rules. Their shift can't be longer than 11 hours in length. Is that right?
11 hours duty, like, yeah. 10 hours driving.
11 hours of duty. Yeah. 10 hour drive, 11 duty, yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing about vans, if you buy a brand new van today, it'll be 3 years before it gets an MOT, which we MOT trucks annually, and we inspect them regularly. Modern trucks, they go in, modern vans go in for a service when the service light comes on, and they have an MOT after 3 years. Well, it could have done 90,000 miles by that time.
And more, potentially.
That's what would worry me if I was a safety professional who had been handed fleet. You know, I'd be looking at my non-HGV fleet as well as my HGV fleet, and that would turn my hair grey, I think.
That's where we went.
Well, you're very lucky.
Well, not you. Yeah, in your case, no. But yeah. Myself and James, yeah.
It just turned it more grey, Mike. That's all, mate.
Yes.
When there's something you were kind of, you're all talking about. What I should have realised is you get the fleet geeks on and get them talking about fleet, I might not get a word in edgeways, which is Interest. Talking there, and there was a couple of things that pricked my ears up when it'd be like, you know, the driver could get away with this, or the driver would pull their card, and the directors didn't know. Just when we talk about fleet, and it's interesting, I know me and Pete have talked about this kind of offline quite a lot around when they're trying to, so we do quite a lot of work around human error and stuff like that. And often it's like this difficult relationship between accountability and then the difference between accountability and blame, and the relationship with that, with learning about what influenced that person to actually make that decision. Do you feel like, what are your guys' opinion on, like, say if somebody's pulling the card, for example, and we can catch them out or whatever, if they're doing that, is the conversation like that driver is trying to play the game, or is the conversation like, why is that driver trying to play the game, or does it vary?
I'll just quickly go with this, if that's all right, and you guys can carry on. But I think, so my automatic thing there is, as an industry, we go, the driver's a dickhead, he's not doing what he should be doing.
Yeah.
However, we don't have the conversation as an industry that actually the culture is driving him to do that, because it's absolutely productivity. It's productivity over safety. So we've got the same challenges. In my opinion, we've got the same challenges where we've got toxic businesses where it's like, get the job done at all costs, which will encourage that to happen. There might be elements of drivers going, do you know what? I'm only an hour from home and I want to stay at home tonight rather than in my cab. You know, there is an element of that. But yeah, as an industry, we point the finger at the driver. But we have got very complex rules, and we have got companies that are very productivity driven. I'm going to shush now and see what these.
No, no, that's and I agree. And actually, this is proof that I've been listening to the podcast. And yeah, we tend to blame the person rather than blame the system. And I think if I know that you safety guys, having listened to the podcast, and it's piqued my interest in other areas, such as some people I follow on LinkedIn. But it's become sort of evident that that's kind of how safety culture, that's how safety, health and safety has been run for many, many years. But, you know, that does ring true with what we do in our industry. We tend to blame, you know, it's very easy to blame the individual. And the driver, you know, but what it's got to be looking a bit deeper than that at the culture, the system.
It's interesting what James said. Productivity and safety do sometimes have a bit of a challenge in the middle, don't they? Yeah. Where productivity, you know, we need to get this done, we need to get that done. Oh yeah, just do that this time. These things happen. So I don't think that's unique to our industry in transport. I've seen it in factories as well, where you know, you'll speak to the guy on the factory floor where it's all like, they've got brilliant, everywhere's marked signage, you know, they've all got their PPE on. But actually, when you speak, it looks great. And when you actually speak to the guys on the shop floor, it's like, yeah, it's all, you know, follow the health and safety rules, do everything like this, do that. But until it comes to productivity falling behind, then things, you know, start to slip. So I don't think it's just our industry, it's unique to that. But interesting about pointing the finger at the driver. The old adage that shit rolls downhill is definitely prevalent in our industry, isn't it? Yeah, they're at fault. They've done it. You know, we've given him a day. We knew it was his son's birthday, but we've given him a 15-hour day. And he's not got back, and he's pulled his card. It's still his fault. Mm. There will be elements of that somewhere.
Absolutely, and I think it's a safety blanket that, dare I say it, leaders in our industry, managers, directors, whoever it might be, it's a safety blanket that they cling to, because they know that if something goes wrong, well, as long as I've got all my boxes ticked here, I can just point the finger at the blame, at the driver, and it's a kind of safety blanket, and it's wrong. It is wrong, definitely.
Mm. Yeah, it's an interesting, I think it's one that still the general safety profession is still trying to get its head around. I think we tend to go too far in that we end up going, I think now we've got like this big no blame movement, which is like, I understand what you're saying, and that blame doesn't help us learn and so on and so that, but like, we can't say no blame when there is legal accountability and people will get blamed. Yeah. I feel like it's become a bit of a platitude now, the same as Vision Zero or Zero Harm has become a bit of a platitude. It's all very much, I don't know, maybe the naivety of the profession, of my profession, but ultimately, like, we're still struggling to get our head around this kind of accountability. When's the right time for accountability? Ultimately, I think is what we're trying to say. But I do get a sense of, and I get very limited interaction with Fleet because I purposely try to avoid it like a plague. When I do interact with it, it's very much like, God, that's just a driver. He's a bit of an idiot. I'll give him a warning when I get back. And I'm like, did we even have a conversation as to why that person might have done that?
Why that ended up there, yeah.
One side of the story, and we've not heard the other. The guy's just a bit of an idiot. Or the guy's just, we've had this problem with him before. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'm not here for Fleet, so I'm not gonna push this. But it is interesting. Do you think the industry, it was a long time ago, I had a guy on who runs a company called Bright Mile, I think, and it's like it's an app-based tech that kind of encourages safe driving behaviors, basically. It's like a behavioral-based app. And he made a claim, he statistically said that in there that statistically speaking, once you drive over 30,000 miles, it's the second most dangerous profession in the world or something like that if you're driving.
Oh, yeah.
30 miles an hour. So it's a very dangerous thing to do, right? Particularly driving HGVs. Do you think the people that run businesses, drive HGVs, manage Fleet, think that it's a dangerous thing to do? Or do you think that
No.
I think it varies, actually. I think some do, some don't. It depends on the culture of the company itself, I would say. So some of the bigger companies, because they have other departments that are health and safety driven, that tips over into the transport side. But perhaps a medium-sized transport business with 25 trucks wouldn't actually think about it. Once again, it's ticking them compliance boxes would be their number one aim.
Absolutely. And I tell you what, it's an interesting statistic. And I know that for years we've said, why doesn't road risks get included in HSE data? Because it would just put it off the scale. So on average, we've been killing one truck driver a week on our roads for goodness knows how long. I mean, it was probably a few years ago, it was more than that. But certainly in the recent times, it's on average about one a week HGV or professional driver is killed on the UK's road. So, if that was one roofer a week or one, factory worker a week, I think we'd be having some deeper conversations about road risks. And I think it's something people don't take into account. I know Jamie will have some experience as well with this, but I've certainly been involved a few times where there's been a fatality in the workplace, not in the workplace, because it didn't happen in the factory or in the yard or but it happened out on the road. And it's just as devastating to the business.
Yep.
And it's interesting that a injury from a road traffic accident is not RIDDOR reportable. That's why that bizarre when you're at work.
Just doesn't figure, does it? On the
And it is. I had dealt with one the other day and I had to ring Pete just to clarify. I think this is RIDDOR. Is this RIDDOR? And Pete was like, yeah, totally. But it is weird, this relationship that we've got. And I think, Mike, you might have hit an awkward nail on the head there in that I don't think we want to admit that, yeah, we don't want to include those stats because price is not.
Because they're high, yeah.
Do you think as well, if you were to extend that, so you said that there is one professional driver a week, what about the people that are not at work? So other, public, general members of the public?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, you're four times more likely to be injured or killed in an accident involving a heavy goods vehicle. So, as a member of that, we've all got. This is why we're all stakeholders in the work of the Traffic Commissioner and the Driver and Vehicle Standards Agency and the police. We're all stakeholders in what they do because we're all road users. And I think the general public, if you happen to have an unfortunate incident with a heavy goods vehicle, you're four times more likely to come off of it not very well than you would be another motor vehicle or another, motorbike or whatever. But yeah, it's a big impact on road safety's heavy goods vehicles.
And I think all I really would like to add to that is actually I've thought of a great guest for James on a future podcast, and that's Mark Cartwright.
Yes.
Who I'm sure we could hook you up with, James. He heads up the National Highways. really, really interesting guy. Great speaker, isn't he, Mike? He came
he's
on half
fantastic
of things.
Speaker, yeah.
He's well worth a chat around. So they have all sorts of different initiatives around safety and road safety and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, he'd be fantastic. But where was I going? It was along the lines of that, and I think I mentioned this in previous podcasts, but HGV drivers, professional vocational drivers, are held to a higher level of regard than normal drivers. And a lot of the public won't necessarily realise that, you know, the transport manager, if a driver gets caught using his phone at the wheel, like all other drivers, he'll get his 6 points and two, or he or she will get their 6 points fine, £200 fine and 6 points on their licence. But differently, it's down to us to report that driver to the traffic commissioner. It's very likely they'll lose their vocational licence for a month. Yeah. Isn't it? So that wouldn't happen to a van driver.
No, they're not regulated to that same level. Mm. They're only regulated like a car driver would be regulated. Yeah, that's a good point.
So, but I think the challenge I then raise is that we've got loads of van drivers out there who are using their phones. And with the new highway code, how have they had that communicated to them around not being able to touch the screen on their mobile? Yeah. It's a whole new kettle of fish, right? Highway code, not able to touch the screen. Most of them are using them for bloody sat navs.
Yeah.
Not only that, if they're delivering parcels, they're probably, you know, they're probably clicking that they've done that job and everything else. It's probably part of their PDA, isn't it, for their work, really. And the van side of things is even going to get bigger, isn't it? It's just going to continuously grow.
It is.
Last mile distribution. There's not the stats there, is there? But last mile distribution is just high. I think the highest risk.
Last mile distribution, but like elaborate. Well, I've never heard that phrase before.
So your Amazon DPD type, last mile type, the guys who are delivering 200 parcels a day in their vans with no brakes, no inspections on their vehicles, yeah, no regulation whatsoever. I'm going to go, because talking of which, here's my food delivery.
That type of thing,
which got there safely.
Right on cue.
It's like we throw this stuff together, isn't it? It's well prepared, it's well planned.
Thanks, Tesco. That was perfectly timed. Cheers, guys.
Yeah. Other supermarket brands are, of course, available. Actually, I'm surprised, Pete. Tesco's, you know, I know Tesco's have got a good rep, like, but I would have thought up in the Hamptons there, it would have been Waitrose or
it's like a big Tesco at Peterborough.
We're clearly not paying him enough, Jamie. That's the problem.
So, why did you? So, I'm assuming was Fleet Geeks like a kind of collaborative idea, or did one of you go, I've got an idea about this thing, what do you think? Or were you all just like over a beer, were like, yeah, that's a great idea. How did Fleet Geeks kind of come about?
I can't remember. I think it was Pete, was it? I can't really remember, if I'm being honest.
We could have because he's not here, because he's just gone to Tesco's here. We could have said no, me and Jamie came. Yeah, but yeah, no, to be fair, it was his idea. And, you know, I mentioned, you know, when I initially spoke to Pete about joining Flagship, I did mention that what was missing in my current role was my ability to go a little bit off-piste, because I was very, you know, every word has to be scrutinised by half a dozen committees. So, you know, and then he said, well, funny you should say that, he said, but you know, I've got this idea for this podcast, and I think that's how it came about, really. But yeah, nice. We'll give him the credit.
Yeah
I think it was initially, yeah, definitely.
And how have you found the industry been quite receptive of it, or is it a mixed bag? Because my relationship with Rerun and Safety has been really interesting through the years, in that the audience has grown. The audience that listen to us all every week are always really positive, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, that's amazing, blah, blah, blah. But interestingly, when I was in employed roles and in between jobs and trying to find a new job, it actually wasn't helpful. It was actually...
Oh, really?
Company saw it as a threat, I think, from as a threat from maybe like branding point of view, as to your point, Mike, as a bit of a, oh, I'm not sure if I like the lack of control I have on that, and this person is worked for a trade association, so similar, everything by committee, so I get what you're saying there, Mike. I can feel,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and it's weird,
and that's one of the things that attracted me to you know to join Pete was You know, I could go off piste a little and unscrew the shackles that were on there originally. I had muted this idea with the powers that be, but yeah, as you say, like through various committees would have to approve it and all the rest of it. And I don't, you know, it just wasn't a goer. But how are they taking it? Well, do you know what? I think we've got a lot of secret listeners, because the number of people on, you know, I speak to say, oh, listen to the podcast. They're great. And I think, well, I didn't even know you listened to the podcast. And, you know, what's this, a secret listener? But I think it's growing, isn't it?
Yeah, we did the Road Transport Expo. I can't think when it was, at the end of July, yeah. I believe. And I was surprised, actually, the number of people that did come up and actually talk about the podcast. And they seem to receive it quite well. So, yeah, we've not had any complaints. That's our surprise. Not that I know of.
Perhaps we have.
It's interesting. Yeah. Do you put Fleet Geeks out on YouTube, or is it just audio? Does it just go out podcast?
I believe YouTube as well, isn't it? Yeah, YouTube and audio media as well.
It's interesting.
I don't know. It's across all the platforms. I think you young people say, don't you? I don't know what that means, but you know, for me, that was a shoes that people wore in the 1970s. But yeah, I think it's across all the platforms.
Even available on the Wind Up radios, Mike. Even
that'd be all right for me.
It was interesting. One of the things about podcasts, to your point about secret listeners, is that you know, it's a 60-minute, 20-minute, 2-hour, whatever type length podcast. If you listen to something, say early on in the episode, that you're like, oh, I don't agree with that, by the end of it, it's 40 minutes later, you might have forgot, and you're just like, I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to feel I can't be asked. Whereas when you put it onto YouTube, you can kind of comment live, because the comment can feedback instantly. So it's an interesting dynamic between the two. But that's nice. I like that the industry is quite receptive of it. So it's kind of freeing being on there, then, to your point, Mike. But like, so, and we've probably touched on some of the stuff that kind of irks you guys in the industry, but. Is there anything we haven't discussed so far that you just go, do you know what? I wish we could sort this out.
Well, I mean, how long have we got? That's a 3-hour mammoth podcast. No, it's I guess this thing that for me, the thing that really irks me, talking in the context that we're talking today, is this: people can't differentiate between compliance and safety. And it is endemic through our industry that people are just looking for compliance. They're not looking for safety. And just ticking that old box, you know. And it can be a bit of a struggle to use that phrase, you know, the spirit, or Nicola used the spirit of the law rather than the and that does hurt me. And the other thing that where that alludes to is the, if you look on the Facebook forums, I'm fairly new to Facebook. I'm discovered it until I joined Pete and the rest, you know, I didn't understand it really. But when you look on the forums there, people are always looking for loopholes. You know, can the driver, the driver can only do this, that and the other. And then somebody will come back, yes. But what if it's the third Sunday after Lent and the driver's name is Steve and Aquarius is rising through the moon? You know, it's kind of like a they're always looking for that loophole. I don't know what you feel, Jamie, about that.
And also another thing that irks me, we sort of, the transport industry manages through fear, doesn't it? You don't do that because rather than education.
Fear.
And that's the way it's sort of managed, isn't it? You do that, you'll get, you know, you potentially get a fire. You do that, or, you know, you face disciplinary action. We don't proactively manage education wise enough, really. It's all about if you do that wrong, you're going to get fined. If you do that, you could lose your license. And I think that has to be there, obviously. There has to be some kind of end point to that, you know, if you're doing stuff wrong. But I think there needs to be, and that's what I like about Flagship. We try and educate, don't we?
Yes.
If you go to a business, they do try and run the business through fear, really, to manage their drivers, to make the compliance, and not so much the safety. And that's not great, is it?
In safety, we love extremes, right? We love tribalism. We seem to be addicted to it. So when people talk about AI, coming into the workplace, particularly in safety, we automatically assume it's going to make someone redundant. It's going to make me redundant, make someone on the shop floor redundant. It's going to make a boardroom member redundant. And the list goes on. Whereas if we had a bit more of an open mindset, we can probably start to understand how AI can really enhance our roles. It can really enable us to just be better at what we do. And considering safety's been on a bit of a plateau for the last decade, more than a decade, then maybe it's something we should really be considering, something that can help us make better decisions. AI can provide more data than what we have ever had. AI can provide richer data than what we've ever had. Therefore, we can make better data-informed decisions. AI can make us better at what we do. And what we do is create better workplaces, right? So often when we think, oh, it's AI versus safety, it's not. It's another amazing tool that I genuinely think, that we genuinely think at RiskFluent and Rebranded Safety can really help us break that plateau. And if this is a topic that interests you and you want to find out some more, then you should definitely follow Protex AI. You should go and find out more about their webinar series that they're running. And the first webinar is called AI versus the EHS Manager. If you want to find out some more information, you should check out their website, which is in the description below. That's a really interesting point there, Jeremy, I think, actually, that you've kind of you've hit on there, because typically within like safety, we've managed very much through control, and we can do that because typically we're in an environment where, so if you think of like health and safety legislation, predominantly comes from industry. So predominantly comes from kind of factory based background. A lot of it does anyway. Obviously, when we move over to construction type roles, it's slightly different, but dominantly, a lot of the people that we're trying to influence and manage are quite close in control, quite literally their body is in the same building as we are, right?
Yeah.
The person. Now, slightly different with trades maybe, but normally you get those couple of touch points with them. You're quite closely, right? Whereas the fleet kind of industry, the HGV drivers, you know, if you've got a driver that's only worked driving nights, you probably might never see them. Jump in a cab. Yeah. Bugger off, and they get sent their jobs through a tablet or whatever, and that's it. It's a profession with not a lot of touch points. You're trying to influence in a way that you don't get interaction with them really, and that the only ways we know how to control is to physically limit what you can do, which we've tried to do through the design of the cab and what you can do in there, but ultimately, it's not cheap to buy a new truck, is it? So that there's a big the company. So the next only thing we know is stick and carrot. So we might try and incentivize or decentivize by scaring you. So it's interesting. Yeah.
It's like
pushing our knowledge, isn't it, and our skills.
Definitely.
I quite often make an analogy in training when we're talking about this in training. In a factory, if you've got somebody using a guillotine, you know, or some sort of press or some sort of nasty thing that will mangle your hands up, you know, you can go in there and say, look, you've taken that guard off. That guard is there to stop you from cutting your hands off. Whereas in our industry, the seatbelt could be seen as the same thing, really. You know, it has the same kind of effect. We put a seatbelt in a vehicle to stop you going through a window screen, which is incidentally in a truck is only, you know, a foot in front of your nose. The way we approach it is say you must wear a seatbelt because a nasty man will give you £100 fine if you don't wear a seatbelt. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the way we come. It's what we do in our industry. The punishment, as Jamie said, the punishment always comes first rather than hang on a minute, you could get like squished like very easily. Mm-hmm. And I think I'll tell you a little story, and I won't mention any names, but a company I did some work with a few years ago, big company, lots of vans, they had a problem with drivers not wearing seatbelts. So in the yard, as they went out the yard, they were checked. Are you wearing a seatbelt? As you go out the gates, are you wearing a seatbelt? And they came back in and they said, right, we've got 100% compliance. Everybody who went out the yard was wearing a seatbelt. Now, a few weeks later, they conducted the same experiment, but they hid down on a roundabout, about 100 metres, 200 metres from the factory gates or the distribution centre's gates. And they did the same exercise and that compliance had dropped down to 60%. So the drivers were putting the seatbelts on to get out the yard because that's where somebody was stood with a clipboard ticking a box. But, you know, straight away down the road, take the seatbelt off. And that's what we've got to turn them on the head. Why they do that?
As for education, as well, it's got to be. It's the only way, really, isn't it? Like James says, it's difficult to get them touch points with drivers. You can't be there. You can't do a safety walk around a truck and it, every time it does a delivery, can you? Well, you can do that in a factory, can't you? You go for a quick walk, at, you know, once a day even. You can't do that with a driver. They're generally out and about. And like you say, they know they've got to follow the rules, perhaps in the distribution centre. However, they're probably gone out of the distribution centre for 10, 12 hours a day. So it's difficult.
Interesting.
I just wanted to add complacency. I think we've got a massive level of complacency because we all drive all the time and drivers just shrug their shoulders, do it all the time. And it's the old, the absence of accidents doesn't necessarily dictate future accident performance, whereas we've got a load of drivers who think, well, I've never had an accident yet. Don't realise that down the road in 2 weeks' time they've got a catastrophic one coming up.
Yeah, you only need one, really, don't you? That can ruin your whole day.
Yeah. We actually.
Sorry, James.
No. It compliments what I was going to say. Really. So, interestingly, we had a lead come into the company a while back, and they said exactly that. You know, or you know, we don't really need you to see you that much, James. So you can probably cut the price down because we're a really safe company. I was like, oh, okay, cool. What are you basing that on? Oh, I've been doing this 52 years. I think I've only had two incidents that I know of. And I said, oh yeah, it's the last bit you said there that's really important, mate, that you know of. Now, you know, the stats outside of that tell me that construction, which is where you're working, is the biggest killer, or sometimes second to, but normally one of the biggest killers in the UK every year, consistently for over a decade. But you seem to be not touched by that. You're just perfect, not like sounds like. How are you doing that? Well, it's that in any accidents. Well, to Pete's point, you know, the absence of accidents, not presence of safety. So, but yeah, it didn't get it, and we left it there, and we're not working with that customer, unfortunately. But it is interesting how we utilize that. But there is not an absence of accidents in road, though, is there? I mean, it happens all the time. We see it, so it's even. We can't turn around and say the absence of accidents is like, yes, the roads are safe, but maybe the roads are safe in comparison to the amount we drive because we all drive so much, don't we? But yeah, like it's not safe. I don't feel safe when I'm on the motorway at all. You're muted, Pete.
Oh, it's on.
Sorry. I think one of the issues is around, I think it's this level of conscious competence, and therefore I think if you surveyed 100 HGV drivers, I would say 99.9% of them would go, but I'm a better driver. It's actually all those others that are the problem.
Yeah.
And it's all those others that are the problem. It's the unwillingness to accept, you know, that they need to make sure that they're safe as well.
And interestingly, like similar to what you just said, I worked with a company that did a lot of that had a fleet, and when they were kind of going to a job, if they got there and were like, I said, what do you do if you get to a job and you're like, I can't do this, not safe, I can't get in there, I can't do whatever, I literally can't fit the vehicle down there, what do you do? Well, the office are really good. I just ring them up and say, we can't deliver there, it's not going to happen. I was like, okay, that's interesting. A couple of days later, I went out with a different driver and had a phone call while she was driving, picked it up. And he was like, oh yeah, can you go to blah blah street? Jamie's just rang me, he can do that job, so can you go and do it? I said, oh okay, that's interesting. I said, does that happen a lot? He said, yeah, when all the other fucking shitty drivers can't do it, they just ring me and I get the job done. I was like, ah, that's interesting. So the office are really good, but no, they're not, they just shift the problem somewhere else, and this guy,
somebody else.
Right. It's very sad, Jazz. I've seen that happen so many times since I've been in this industry. He won't do that job. Yeah. We'll send it to someone else. It's not that he won't do it. It's because he doesn't feel safe doing that job. But someone else's different perception on safety is that they'll send them instead rather than investigate the root cause. Yeah. You're right.
Customers can be the worst of that. They'll say to the driver, when the driver, you know, makes a thing about, look, I don't know if I can get down there, pal. The customer will say, well, the guy who came last week did it. But what they don't understand is the guy who came last week came in a 7.5-tonner, and this guy's turned up in a 44-ton Arctic. It's a little bit different, you know. But and of course, that being predominantly male. You know, we are thankfully seeing more and more female drivers on the road, but the male in us will say, if Fred did it last week, I'm going to bloody do it. And that leads to problems.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there's another issue with that as well. Generally, a driver will get there and he doesn't want to be held up because he's still got lots of work to do that day. So it'll be like, I'll just do it this once. I need to get this off, so I won't, you know, I won't get home tonight, or I won't get back, or I'm going to run out of time. So there's them pressures as well, isn't there? There's
absolutely
so many different pressures to make them bend their rules or just try it that once.
I think you raise a really good point there. There's a lot of demands on drivers. When we look at like the management standards, there's a huge amount of demands, and also there's so many demands placed on them externally, which are not like are out of their control. For example, road conditions, road works, delays, etc., etc. So there's so many factors there that can impact their productivity, which aren't their responsibility or aren't down to them.
It's funny, really, because we spoke about the what did you call them, the last mile drivers, was that?
Yeah.
Which makes sense to me now. You ship it to the local station and then they do the last mile. I get that. But when you said it first, I was like, what? What's the last mile? Right, makes sense now. Anyway, there's a situation where it just shows how restrictive we create environments in which employees operate in, not just in Fleet, but anywhere else. And we were due to go out, me and the wife and everything, and we were like, we were late, or we were going to be late, I can't remember, and we were waiting for delivery of some PC equipment, and I didn't want, as Amazon and everyone else and DPD, and I've all seemed to have managed to still do after COVID, is just leave stuff at the door, which I'm like, how post-COVID are we still expecting that you're going to leave this like really expensive piece of gear just sitting at my door and not know how long I'm going to be? So I was like, well, I can't trust it. I need to stay. So I was like, oh, you know, in your app, it says seven stops away and you can see where the So I was like, it's literally behind us up the road. I'm just going to run up there. I'm going to say, hey, mate, look, here's my order. Here's evidence that I had my driver's license on me, my address. Can I save you some time and save me some time and just take it off you? And he says, I'm not allowed. The app won't let me issue the delivery until I've done the free delivery before you. And I was like, even though I'm here and I could save you time, like, it's funny that time pressure is often a thing that forces us to make poor decisions. But then just once I'd create an environment which could save him time, and the system didn't let him save
the system. Yeah.
Interesting. And it comes back to that point, is that we've got very little ways to control the driver behavior, that sometimes we become very restrictive and not allow them to be the to be flexible that we could benefit from. That's a very poor way of saying it, but do you think that there's one thing I spot quite a lot in safety, is that we're doing a lot of safety work, a lot of systems, a lot of tech and a lot of stuff in the name of safety that I think is trying to overcompensate for the lack of investment on competence? Do you think that applies to HGV drivers and also just van drivers, fleet drivers in general?
Yeah, absolutely. The reliance on, you know, it's a difficult path to go down, isn't it? Because we want to improve efficiency through having, you know, driver aids and systems that allow us to plan work better. But at the same time, we can become slaves to those, and it can take some of that decision making. You know, I'm pretty sure, you know, no secret, the fact that I always wanted to be an airline pilot, never quite made it. But I'm pretty sure that, you know, those early aviators had skills that the modern aviators probably don't have, because quite a lot of the systems now are automated. And I think it's definitely the same with driving. And that can, you know, we want to make the world a more efficient place. We want to make the world, but is that necessarily making it a safer place for the driver? I don't know. It's a good point. Really good point.
I just wanted to add, how does it feel, Mike, wanting to be a pilot, but actually being on a podcast with like the best aviation fighter pilot that America has had to offer?
An injustice. something I'd say.
I know,
it's
yes.
It's just one of your expense, mate. It's just one of your expense, Goose.
Goose is, yeah.
Right. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Stunt double, yeah.
Isn't that good? Because I freaking die halfway through the film, don't I? So...
spoiler
through the
like.
First film, yeah.
Original Top Gun, and you, I'm sorry, but yeah, spoilers.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Sorry, Jamie, I interrupted you, mate.
No, I was just saying, it's quite interesting about all the driver age now. Is I had a driver moan the other day about how much of a distraction it was.
Yeah,
because you've got the side scans beeping, you've got a camera on the left hand side, you've got what, 6 mirrors now on a truck.
And you've only still got 2 pair of eyes.
Yeah, you've probably got a sat nav. Drivers rely more and more on a sat nav rather than, you speak to a driver 10 years ago, they'd be able to tell you where somewhere was. You speak to a driver now, it's they've relied on sat nav so much.
It was the postcode, yeah.
So there's so much information. Then when you're looking outside the window, you've got your road signs. There's a lot of, I did read somewhere that a driver, I can't remember what the exact figure was, the amount of information a driver processes when they drive now. It's astronomical. There's so much going on.
It's such an interesting point you bring up there again, Jamie, because I've recently got a new car, and my old car used to have adaptive like sensors. So it would warn me, you're getting too close to the car in front of you. And then if I put cruise control on, it would do that for me. It was great. What I've noticed now going into my new car, which doesn't have the sensors in front of me, it doesn't scream at me if it senses that car in front of me has put its brakes on and you haven't put your brakes on, doesn't do anything. I've noticed that my driving has changed. I used to be quite a cautious driver with people in front of me. I wouldn't get too close. I've noticed I'm driving quite close to people, and I'm slamming my brakes on, and I'm like, why am I doing it? And I've realized, because kind of learned helplessness has set in, I got so used to this driver aid, as you call it, to help me not go close to the car in front. I've just gone, cool, I don't need to focus on that. I'll go as close as the car will let me. And then it will scream at me, and I'll just put my brakes on. And I've noticed that in my own driving, and I'm not driving a freaking HGV, I'm driving a stupid little SUV.
James is the driver trainer, so he'll know this more than anybody. But yeah, a good driver should be able to be self-critical. And when I'm self-critical of my own driving, generally speaking, it's around tuning the radio in. I mean, once upon a time, I twiddled a knob. I'm old, so I turned a knob, and that changed my radio station, you know. But nowadays, it's so complicated that I'm having to take my eyes off the road. And that's where my driving lets me down. Would you think?
Check out Victor Meldrew, Jamie.
Yeah.
Did you have to pull your aerial up before you set off?
Good point.
His choke out as well, and his manual choke.
Because you won't know.
I had a manual choke on my first car.
If you'd forgotten to pull your aerial up, you had to put your hand out the window, lean across, and pull your aerial up first. Yeah, absolutely.
So there has been some improvements there.
There has been some improvements. Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite interesting as well, like the mirror cams on trucks. How a lot of fleets have implemented them, and you speak to drivers. I've not seen many drivers that like them.
No,
they find them a bit of a hindrance. That's quite a weird one, isn't it? So where's that? Is that an improvement, the mirror cam? So yeah, obviously the time will be the proof on that, really. But a lot of drivers I speak to absolutely hate mirror cam. Like, they won't want to drive the truck if it's got mirror cam. Yeah, if you look at a lot of fleets have gone that way, haven't they?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, well, the vehicles, I think, will eventually all be mirror cams, but they're going to have to get used to it. But yeah, it is different.
But is that progress? I don't see what benefit that gives, really. I'm not sure. The jury's out, I would say.
I'm sure a piece of glass is cheaper than a camera.
Yeah. I think the claim is 1 fuel efficiency by 3-5% for a mirror cam. It gives less friction. What am I talking about? Less air resistance.
Less drag, yeah.
I was going to say, bloody poor physics, that is. And then the other one is that it's alleged to give you a wider view than what a mirror could reproduce.
Yeah, I think it does.
Is the alleged benefits. But I have heard issues, obviously, around, quite apparently they're not much fun if you get a bead of water on them.
No, I've had that as well. Right. Yeah.
Apparently, if you get a bead of water on a mirror cam, all of a sudden everything's just distorted. Um, So I don't know whether they're heated. I've not driven a mirror cam, so I don't know.
I did read in the press that the new mirror cams are better than the old ones. I don't know why. I have actually tried to hitch a trailer up with a mirror cam, and I found it quite tricky because I was looking outside the window for the mirror rather than inside the cab for the camera. But that would come under it. It's a bit like we were talking about. You get used to what you have, don't you? So a bit like you with your assisted cruise control. You do get used to what you have.
Absolutely. What Jamie doesn't tell you there is the trailer was in another postcode, but
he was trying to line it up.
Do you think what's your thoughts, gents, on like the point to entry to become a driver, like the competency of being a driver?
Good question.
Interesting. I'll just show this story. I did some training this morning with tachographs with a driver, not long past his test. To drive a truck professionally, you need a professional competence, certificate of professional competence, say that again. And I was going through the tacho, and there's certain things he didn't know. And he was saying, it's quite interesting when you pass your test, you do modules 2 and 4 to get your CPC when you first start. And he said, this wasn't discussed, this important stuff here. However, you know, checking for immigrants under the vehicle, and that was. You know, what's important is never going across the water. Yeah, that was a point of conversation on his modules there, but not the driver's hours, what we was going through. So it's quite interesting. What I would also say as well, the point of entry, it's been a long time since I've done my test. I don't know if anyone's done it more recently. Have you got HGVP?
Yeah, but mine's still been some time ago.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's generally, what is it, a week, 2 weeks? I can't really remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, it used to be class two, so you used to do a rigid and then you'd do a class one as well, wouldn't you? Whereas now it's straight into class one, isn't it? So they have streamlined it. But it's, you know, I think very much the driver CPC qualification. People will have heard me talk about the transport manager CPC qualification being a you know, something where you get the ticket and then you learn to do it. And driver CPC is much the same. It's and driving is much the same. It's almost similar to you being able to go and get your NEBOSH diploma without ever having properly identified and managed risk in a work environment. You know, you can go and get the ticket. It doesn't mean you're competent to do it.
Very big difference in the fact that I'm not operating a massive machine that drives. I mean, I don't know what's the fastest HGV can go?
56 mile an hour if you stick to the limiter.
Right. What's the fastest it can go though?
You could let it roll downhill to about 91 hours, I suppose, but it wouldn't recommend it.
I tell you what, I once followed one of our, when I was at Volvo, we had a dual, Volvo do a dual clutch FH tractor unit. So a dual clutch is taken like from racing technology. So the next gear's engaged before it's actually left. You've got two clutches basically. So you've got next gear ready to go like that. And this Volvo could smoke a Range Rover Sport. That's for sure. It was quick.
What?
Very, very quick. Yeah. Proper quick. Smoked a Range Rover Sport at the lights. Yeah. Yeah.
A tractor unit on its own is very powerful, isn't it? You think about it. A tractor unit on its own, it's designed to carry potentially 44 ton. And what's a tractor unit on its own? About 7.5 ton, if that.
Yeah.
So that one would have been about 8 ton, yeah. And 500 brake horsepower. Well,
they're up to 720 now, aren't they, horsepower?
770. 770.
Bloody hell.
The biggest production at the minute, yes.
That's Bugatti Veyron territory, that is, isn't it? Almost.
Yeah. You can operate a phenomenally powerful machine with what, two weeks training?
2 weeks training, yeah. 2 weeks training, yeah. 2 weeks training.
That to me just feels. I mean, it's interesting because we've got like, I don't know if we still have a driver shortage or what, like people are not talking about that anymore, but like, you know, we used to have this driver shortage, whatever that means, but like, and then you can feel like that environment being like, oh, we need drivers quick, being like, okay, cool, let's cut it down, let's cram it into, you use the word streamline, Pete, like, let's do a streamline course where we can teach them to drive a HGV in a week now. Great, the industry cheers with jubilous.
It's interesting, they took the reversing part out of the test for a class one vehicle. Wow.
it's still tested on it, but the training centre now tests the driver on the reversing part. Right. So I don't know to what standard that's done, so I can't really comment. And but the, it's that stuck out.
For those safety professionals that might be listening, I'm sure that's where your vast majority of your listeners come from. In the yard, that is where you're likely to get an incident involving a heavy goods vehicle, where a vehicle is coupling or uncoupling, and it can be really, really nasty. If that isn't done properly, then, you are going to be a part of that sort of investigation as a health and safety professional, because they're going to be happening on your watch and on your manor. So, and then they've taken it out of the test. It is tested, but it's tested by an instructor rather than an examiner. So, as Jamie says, I'm not quite sure of the standards there. But I'll give you another example, though, where safety and compliance don't, go hand in hand. And in talking about the driver shortage, the government also took the decision to remove the trailer test from car drivers, basically. So if you wanted to pull a trailer that was bigger than 750 kilos, which is, to be fair, your Halfords camping trailer, that type of thing, you previously had to take a test. The government have now said, or since December, the government said you don't need to do that anymore. We're going to automatically allow you to pull a bigger trailer. So you could have a van, a Ford Transit van, or other makes are available, of course, pulling a trailer now, a big trailer, up to 3.5-ton trailer. And essentially the guy or girl could do that on a car license, where, that would be compliant. But, as a business, if you've got a transit van, maybe with a mini digger or something like that on the back, maybe you're into pipe work or groundwork or something like that, then yes, your driver could do that on an ordinary car license now without taking a further test. But would you let them? I certainly wouldn't. You're the safety guys, but certainly for me, that comes under Pura. And you've got your basic duty of care, haven't you, for that? But so without training, possibly.
But then we come to the conversation of the difference between competence and training, right? So I can send someone on a 1-day course or a 2-day course or a 3-day course or a 5-day course or however long on how to drive a car with a trailer on the back end of it, or a van with a trailer on the back end, or even a HGV. But the difference between that and competence, in that when I've had conversations with people, okay, cool. So you're a bit mad. You're trying to get loads of drivers in, So they've been on their course, they've done 2 weeks, and then what? Do they shadow? Do you have them to, it depends. If they've been driving for a bit, we might just let them straight on the truck. Right, okay. Or then if they haven't been driving for very long, we'll have them with Bob for a little bit, and then Bob will say, yeah, you're good, jump in the truck. I just think, wow. And that's not just limited to truck. I mean, we do that absolutely everywhere. You get a driver, forklifts are phenomenally powerful pieces of kit with two big knives on the front of them. and we just go on a 2-day course and just go, cool, off you go, go and lift as much as you want. And I've been through that. I'm a forklift truck driver of any... In my safety role, in my first role, and it was just an internal course with the team leader. It was just like, yeah, you'll be all right. Here's your keys.
You'll be all right, yeah.
And it's just, we do this so much. We do it absolutely everywhere. The difference between having what people call a ticket and actually being competent.
I think it's that mentality of I've done what I needed to do, tick the box, isn't it? Rather than actually looking at it. Like we talked about at the start of this, the spirit of the law. And that's a proper analogy of that, isn't it? Have we done everything really we should be doing?
Yeah, definitely. Interesting. Pete, you keep looking in and out, mate, but if you're there, I did when you were out with getting your Waitrose delivery. I asked the gents if there's anything we haven't covered that irks them. I mean, we've chatted quite a lot over the last couple of months, weeks, and we might have touched on something that kind of irks you. But is there anything we haven't covered that you just think, God, I wish we could sort this out?
I'm dipping in and out on the internet. I apologise, and I've missed that last question. I think it was around what else have we missed? What potentially haven't we spoken about? And no, I think we've given a fairly comprehensive overview of fleet management. I think if people want specific advice and support, they need to give us a shout. But I think we've been fairly comprehensive, mate, to be fair. I'm sorry if my internet has been a bit up and down.
Not so much of the earth.
Just came at the right time there, yeah.
At that point. So I just want to kind of maybe tie it up with one other question. If we've talked quite a lot about the challenges of the industry and kind of what irks you and so on, why do you stay? What do you love about the profession? Why are you still here? Why the hell do you work with Pete?
Because they wouldn't have me as a pilot.
Why do you stay in the industry? What do you love about it?
I think it's a very rewarding industry. There's a lot of good people in it as well. A lot of hardworking people. I've been around different industries, and transport is a very, very hardworking industry. And it is good when the team pulls together and things get done. You know, the loads are all delivered. I always say with transport, you start with a plan A, and if you get to plan B, C, or D, you've done really well, because so many things go wrong through the day. And that's the real team mentality to get these things done generally. Transport's an interesting role. It's forever changing. It's quite a dynamic industry as well. It's not just driving. There might be, as part of that driving job, they might have to be cleaning out sewers, or they might be delivering food in fridges. They might be using cranes, lifting skips. It's really dynamic industry with different sectors to the industry as well.
I guess for me, I had kind of fallen out of love with it a little bit as an operational transport manager. And I kind of, I peaked. Pete's going to go, you're going to see a rolling of eyes here. I kind of peaked because I kind of led, when I was down in Portsmouth, I kind of led the team there to the Fleet News Fleet of the Year Award. See, I knew I could get to mention that one. And I kind of thought, well, there's only one way down from here. That's like sort of, winning the league. There's only one way down. And I was quite, at the time, I was quite sort of done with operational transport management. And then I discovered training. And training gave me a new kind of impetus and a new lease of life. And, since I discovered training, the industry has become actually more appealing to me rather than less appealing. So it was that sort of kind of rescued me from probably going off and doing something slightly different. But I thought I'd love to get that in there as well. Oh, it's that picture on the wall just up there. Look, with me getting the.
I'm surprised it hasn't got more pride of place, Mike. I'm surprised it's
really
not like
literally. Be.
There's probably one in every room, Pete.
There's one in every room, definitely, yeah.
Pete Rushmere, who for the last two episodes has been sitting in front of his award shelf that he's BNI awards and that.
So why do I do it? Well, I get to work with Mike, who's a legend, apparently. And I get to work with Jamie as well, even if that's not for as long as I want it to be. It's transport, like, do you know what? Transport is like so dynamic, isn't it? And it's so varied. Our customers are so varied. When I left school, I wanted to be a professional footballer, and that was never going to happen. And if I was never going to be a professional footballer, all I knew was that I didn't want to work in an office. I hated, despised the thought of working in an office.
Is that why you never in this one?
Yes.
I'm not, though, am I?
Not really.
Because I'm always out doing stuff. I can't not be. I'm someone who's always on the move, and I think that's quite well suited to the industry, isn't it?
Massively, yeah.
Quite well suited to the industry. So I love it. I love a fresh challenge. The phone rings, a client rings, and literally anything could have happened. It is one of those, isn't it? I love it. My phone rings, and it could be anything from you name it, it could have happened. So yeah, it's always good fun. I love it.
I think, Jamie, you touched on something which I didn't even think about, which would have been a good conversation, actually, and I'm happy to touch on it for a few minutes. But the drivers are not, for a lot of companies and a lot of jobs. They're not just drivers, are they?
Yeah, well, ironically, the customer was out this morning. They don't see themselves as drivers. They have a truck to do their job. Yet they're governed by all the same rules, and that's why they find it quite tricky, because they've got to got the HGV license because they need it to fulfill their job, although that's probably only 5% of their job.
Yeah.
And they, you know, it's difficult for them to comprehend that because they see themselves as engineers, not lorry drivers. However, they've got to follow all the rules of a lorry driver once they've put, you know, once they start driving that truck. So yeah, it's really interesting, that dynamic there of, you know, your mindset's got to change a little bit when you're driving that truck. You need to be a lorry driver when you're driving that truck, because that's what you're governed by at this point.
I've got to have a big shout out to the drivers, to be fair, because they never cease to amaze me. They are a diverse bunch. They are interesting. They're funny. I did a driver CPC course not so long ago where I met one guy who'd been doing the same job for 57 years. And on that same course was an Elvis impersonator. They are just such a, you did start scratching under the surface, and they are such a diverse and talented and funny bunch of people that it does, you know, you do get some dickheads. Let's not pretend that you don't, but you know, there are some really, really good guys and girls out there, and you know, they are the backbone of this country. And that's, you know, that's not, you could have trains on strike, to be fair, you know, no disrespect to train drivers. You could have bus drivers on strike, but I tell you what, lorry drivers, if they went on a strike, your world would come to a crumbling mess within days. You know, we've seen that. And, you know, I don't think they get the recognition that they deserve sometimes.
It's a tough job, isn't it? It's a tough job. Long hours. Not many people want to get up at 3-4 in the morning.
Yeah.
And go into a 15-hour day, do they? It's a tough job.
And I think
it's a lot of concentration.
I think many people don't see it really as a skilled job, but like... Yeah. Of that, and again, my interaction with Fleet has been limited, but of the drivers that I've been in the cab with and just sat and watched them maneuver this huge vehicle into some phenomenally tight gaps where I'm like, you ain't ever getting in there.
You tell me that's not skilled, yeah.
Not a chance in there. And not so long ago, I saw a guy put a video on LinkedIn of a guy reversing an Arctic in... the middle of London. Everyone was beeping at him, like, "Boo, boo, boo, can't hurry up, get out of the way," into what I thought is never going to fit this trailer down there. No way you're going to fit that. There's solid walls, and this guy's just reversing it down on a tight road. And I've watched this video, like, fascinating. It was kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of like one of those, you know, there's like, I don't know, ASMR videos where they get so satisfying because it just perfectly fit or something. It was like that. So that is some skill right there, to be able to not just maneuver that vehicle into that really tight, very precise position, but to do it in the middle of London with loads of pedestrians waiting for you to do what you need to do. With the cars beeping at you, and I just think about that, to get on to my drive, we go like quite, we live on quite a busy road, so I'm like if you hit me, it's your fault, I'll stop and I'll start reversing, and loads of people overtake, and I thought, I'm in the right here, I'm maneuvering, you've got to wait for me. I think you might tell me I'm wrong. I'm the one maneuvering, so I stop and I reverse into my drive, and the amount of people that will just go. And I'm like, my front end's going to stick out where you're overtaking me, or I'm moving. I remember on my test being getting a minor on the first one because I carried on reversing when somebody was overtaking me. So I got a minor for that. I should have stopped and let them do what they need to do, apparently. And nowadays, I'm like, fuck you. You go. I'm doing what I need to do. I think back to all the other things that I might do, public speaking or whatever, and the second all those eyes are on me, like, I'm not at my full potential. And now you're operating all of those things, and now you're operating a HGV. I just think it's a phenomenally skilled role that I don't think we see as a skilled role.
No, I agree with that. Yeah, massively. It's not only the driver's side, it's the working out your hours, planning your day in your head, making sure you're going to get your deliveries off on time, make sure you find somewhere to stop. It's not easy to park a HGV. You're driving into the centre of London and you're running out of driving time. You know, it's skilled to work out where you can park it to get your brake in and stuff like that.
Nowhere inside the M25, eh?
Yeah, there's so many different things that goes on in a driver's head.
And customer interaction as well. They're doing a lot of customer services as well. They're dealing with all. It's just the stuff that they have to do is phenomenal. I know that the head of safety for one of the main waste companies in the UK, and you know their class was HGVs, I assume, a bin lorry.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Difficult job that is. I'll tell you what, that is a difficult job.
And some of the stuff he has to deal with, and people, we would go, they're just a bin man. Do you know? Yeah. It's like, Jesus Christ. Like,
they're doing a dynamic risk assessment every street, pretty much, aren't they? Yeah. As soon as they turn down that street, they're looking, can I get down there? If I've got to reverse out this street, is there a way out? Yeah, they're looking at the hazards. It's tough.
And he was telling me he's had somebody undertake the bin lorry on the path, so the car and like literally nearly hit one of his bin men, which I just thought, wow, Jesus Christ, for what work for like 5 minutes to get to the pub. I don't know, it's just underrated.
It is underrated. I always, a little challenge, and it can be for the listeners as well, if you don't believe what we're saying about bin lorries, Google bin lorry accident or bin lorry crash. I'll tell you what, you'll find hundreds of them. Hundreds of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very, very difficult job.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if you've got a fleet, of the couple of customers I've worked with that have fleet, and where we've been doing stuff where their behavior or whatever kind of rolls into the project, kind of operationally, it's a big part of what you do. I've just kind of spent a couple of days in the cab with the drivers, like a couple of different drivers throughout the days. Like, you get a real sense of appreciation for what they have to deal with every single day. It's phenomenal. So my advice would be get in the cab. But like, just whilst we've got you guys here, and a lot of listeners are just taking on fleet, what if you're being just given fleet or you've not had it for too long, like, what's the kind of things that you would be like, here, think about this first, or go here and read this, watch this, do whatever. Obviously, go and check out Fleet Geeks, but you get... we'll plug that in a minute.
The best bit of advice I was given by a transport director was, do it safe, do it legally, and then do it cost effectively. And I think that's a good starting point, isn't it? Make sure you're safe and legal. And don't get me wrong, the cost effectiveness has got to come. It's, you know, it's tight margins in transport, but there's no point making lots of money if you're injuring people and you're going to get shut down because you're not compliant. So yeah, I say do it safe. Make sure you've got a safe operation. Everyone knows what they should be doing. Do it legally. Make sure the trucks are compliant, your drivers are compliant. And that's a great place to start. I always think as well, if you do one thing well, generally the culture rolls through the business, you do it all well.
And so I think
make sure you know what you're all about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you hit the nail on the head there, James, that go out with them. Find out for yourself what it's like, you know, and just immerse yourself in that world for a day or two, and just get to grips with what it actually is they do. Because, you know, my argument, if you like, with safety professionals is in the past has been, you know, you've probably got a risk assessment that thick for somebody stapling their face to the desk. But, you know, what happens when your drivers leave that gate? You know, what do you know about that risks, and what do you know about them? Where's your risk assessment for that? And so, yeah, get out there and do it, and don't staple your face to the desk, basically.
Nice one, Pete.
Yeah, so I think yard safety is vital. I think workplace movement of vehicles is huge, and I think often overlooked. I think that's a vital thing in enforcing strong safety behaviours in your yard where things are visible. And then my next thing is regular meetings with your drivers, a really strong safety induction process about that's empathetic, not just dictatorial.
Hang on, I just got to let someone know.
A waitress.
The Amazon driver.
So it's about having that empathy with the drivers. But I definitely, you know, I think a massive thing is having a really nice driver induction process and ongoing meetings with drivers, ongoing comms, I think is really, really important.
Nice one. Thank you very much, gents, for coming on. I've had a pleasure chatting with you all. It's been a good laugh as well. But I think there's a lot a lot of insight there. I think we've kind of covered everything we wanted to cover. I think a lot of people listening to this will be able to, oh yeah, that's very, very similar challenges as to what we're dealing with as a profession from a safety point of view, as well as a fleet point of view, with some nice insights there as well. Who wants to do plugs? So what are we doing? A plug for Fleet Geeks and a plug for Flagship then? Do you want to divide that, or do you want to, who's going to do the plug-in? Who's the salesman?
Oh, that's Pete. No, that's Pete.
Yeah, that's definitely not me. I'm not the salesman here. I'd say, yeah, Pete and Mike.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know about this. So I think, I feel like I'm under a bit of pressure here. So sell me this pen. So what I'd say about Fleet Geeks, we've got lots of ways that people listening can access information that will help support them in their role. And the first entry level is the podcast, which is there free of charge for people to go and have a listen to. We've then got a free networking event, which is the last Wednesday of the month, generally speaking, where people can come and meet like-minded professionals. But ultimately, it's all geared towards what we call the peer-to-peer group mentoring program. And that is where isolated, lonely transport people or potentially safety people who have a fleet-type role need a bit of support and can have some real life support, mentoring, progress, those kinds of support packages that people really need to help them flourish in their role and get the professional development they need. That's what we offer in the peer-to-peer group, which is run at the moment once a month. We have one group, but we're looking to expand that. And we have a group of mentors, which includes Mike, myself. We've got the main compliance guy from one of the largest supermarkets in the UK, who manages I can't remember how many fleet units he manages, but it's something like 8,000 and more than that drivers and about 50 transport managers across multiple operation centres. And then we've also got a really good guy who works as a consultant as well and a trainer. So there's really varied experience of the mentors in the group, and members get lots and lots of value from it. So that's the Fleet Geeks. And then Flagship Partners, we make our clients safer, greener and greater. We focus on providing consultancy and training services for fleet operators to help support them. How was that?
That was nice. That was nice, mate. Well rehearsed on your 60 seconds over the years, I'm sure. Thank you very much. And if people wanted to find out about those, fleetgeeks.com, flagship.com,
yeah, flagshippartners.co.uk is the website. If you're interested in the podcast, just search Fleet Geeks on your favourite podcast app. It'll be there.
Nice one. We'll put links in the description as well, mate.
Thank you
very much for being co-host for the last, this quarter as well. It's been a pleasure. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
I've really enjoyed it as well. It was much better when it was just us two, though. But there
we go. We'll do a spin-off, Mike.
Yeah. Well, yes, we ought to, a bit like Knots Landing from Dallas. We ought to do a spin-off series. Yeah.
Yeah. You could do like not rebranding safety.
No, thanks very much for having us on, James.
Yeah, cheers, James.
It's been great. Absolutely brilliant, and lovely to chat.
Yeah, no worries, gents. And it was nice to do it, Pete. The episodes we've recorded so far, we've done on a Thursday, which is the day that I get up at the crack of dawn and go to a networking meeting, and then me and you jump on the call normally the last thing of the day. So I'm like yawning my head off halfway through, which has no reflection on the conversation.
You hit that one well, mate. See, I do listen to them.
I've had feedback and that, James, you need to stop yawning with the mic on. And I was like, no, I'm not yawning because Pete's boring. I'm yawning because I'm up early in the morning on the Thursday. So it was nice to do it on a Wednesday where I'm not so tired. But thank you, gents. Thank you for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. Yeah. Thanks for having us, mate. Cheers for coming on, Mike and Jamie. Appreciate that.
Cheers.
Okay, peeps, hope you enjoyed that episode. Thank you very much, Pete Rushmere, for being our quarterly co-host for this quarter. It's been a pleasure having you. And thank you very much for the rest of the Fleet Geeks for coming on the podcast as well. We'll link Fleet Geeks down in the description below if you want to find out some more about that. I hope you've got some value out of this quarterly co-host with Pete. Loads of safety professionals seem to be taking on fleet, and it's a big and complex area, so hopefully you got some value out of that. We will link Flagship Partners in the description below as well. Otherwise, I'll catch you next week. Safe.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.